Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and families and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. This edition of 411 Teen talks politics rap. Tapping into the pulse of young folks, the Politics Rap team consists of teens with diverse political affiliations, all in the IB program at Rickards High School. The panel seeks to analyze and evaluate current national, state, and local politics. Joining me here at the roundtable, I'll have them introduce themselves.
My name is Apoorva Srivastav. I'm currently a junior at Rickards High School.
And I am Jackson Burks, a senior at Rickards High School as well.
And I welcome you. Rickards High School is home to several outstanding programs available to Leon County students. The International Baccalaureate Diploma Program is one of those programs. It offers high-quality international educational study, commonly known as the IB program. It fosters critical thinking and provides a challenging, comprehensive curriculum. The last 2 years of high school is when all this happens. 411 Teen applauds the Rickards High School IB program for keeping education relevant, stimulant, and real. Okay, let's see. We got so much that we can talk about.
Yes, ma'am.
But
we do.
It's been a while. But looking at the local level, what would you all identify as major concerns from your perspective, and why would you identify them? And I'm looking at you, Apoorva, so I guess.
Something that really stands out to me, not only on just a local level but a personal level, is the issue of mental health in students. Mm-hmm. This is something that's not really that talked about in schools or in Leon County itself, where I see on a daily basis a lot of my friends who are, you know, struggling with mental health, who, like, can't sleep at night at the correct times, who have trouble getting out of bed in the morning because they dread having to go to school, or they dread having to, you know, even, like, participate mm-hmm. in life. So mental health is definitely something that is a huge problem right now.
Is that something that – is there any venue that you all – can talk about this in the school curriculum at all? Or is it, I mean, and it probably is very similar to like mental health every place else. Mm-hmm. Is there a taboo? Folks don't want to talk about it. I mean, they might talk about it among a select group.
I think it's very open among students.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know that the school system does a good job of engaging in that dialogue with
Are they aware of it? Excuse me for interrupting. Do you think they're aware of just how the severity of it?
I think it's something that's there and they're aware of it, but it's not necessarily something the Leon County school system is actively pursuing.
From your perspective, Jackson, what's happening on the local level?
Well, living in Tallahassee, Florida, capital of the state, it's a big college town, Florida State, FAMU, big college town. A big problem in the United States right now that we're dealing with is going to college and how the finances of that work out, different proposals, free college. As it's been coined, the college debt crisis increases every year. So I think that's something that really interesting. Living in Tallahassee, you can't go without encountering college students.
That's true.
So it's something that's very relevant to our daily lives.
And you as a senior, a graduating senior who's getting ready to take that walk.
Yes, ma'am. Soon enough, picking a college and going down, having to deal with that debt myself.
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it is really something to consider, seriously, because who wants to graduate from college with thousands of dollars of debt? Yet lots of people do it.
I mean, it happens every day.
Every day.
What's really concerning to me is that a lot of IB students who get into really, really nice schools but end up going to FSU and UF just because of the money. It's that they have the amazing opportunity to get an amazing education at a high-level school, but they're not able to afford it, and that's what's holding them back. And I think that's the real problem.
And that's interesting that you say that. I just did a program with a college admissions administrator, and he was telling me that there really is money out there. Now, this is just what he said. I'll have to remind you when that program's coming on. But there really is money out there. But you all are not advised of it. And it takes some work, you know, to apply. You know how applying for admission is.
Absolutely.
Okay? It's arduous. It's a pain. Okay. Well, this is the same type of thing. But he said there is money out there. I mean, there are scholarships for just about everything.
Absolutely.
You know, that was an interesting piece to hear him say that. Mm-hmm. He said, now their counselors aren't going to advise them of this. This is something that they're going to have to do their homework on. But even places that you would not think of, like Clairol, the hair people, they have scholarships that they offer. Places that you just would never consider have scholarships. They aren't advertised. You have to look for them.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's true. My experience with guidance counselors has been they are spending majority of their time with disciplinary issues, and they don't have the time. This is no fault of them. I think this is part of the issue. One of the issues is, at least at Rickards, that they're so busy dealing with disciplinary issues, they don't have time necessarily to advise things like that or sit down with a group of students or even a student at a time to help them with scholarships or applications or things like that. And that might just be speaking from the experience of an IB student who might have a less hands-on guidance experience. Mm-hmm. But I certainly haven't been given any guidance in that area. I've been pursuing scholarships. Obviously, that's something I've done on my own time. But for a student who might have been working a job for 2 or 3 years in college and lives in a single-parent household, that's not something that you can do in your free time all the time.
Right.
So I think it's an issue. There's money out there. I would say there's sometimes money out there and sometimes there's not. Mm-hmm. It happens. It comes down to the situation a lot of times.
I would tend to agree with you, and he did too, because he did say, you know, that, hey, there are some circumstances and there are some situations where the advisor, the high school advisor, really does not advise, you know, because they are so tied up doing other types of work, so to speak. So, okay, moving right along. Okay, I had something that had been brought to my attention, and you all may be well aware of it, is that the libraries, the Leon County libraries, are closed on Monday.
Yes, ma'am.
What sense does that make? Or is it just me? What about those students that utilize the library? Everybody may not be as fortunate as you all. They may not have computers at home. And so the libraries are really utilized by a large population of students for their computers and, technology. What does that say to the student where it's closed on Monday? You're not to do your work too bad? I don't know. It just kind of struck me as closed on Monday. I mean, is it me or how does that strike you? Is it no big deal?
For me, I think it kind of represents the decline that I personally have seen in the usage of libraries, where I know when I was a little kid, I used to go to libraries all the time, read books, be on the computers. And those places used to be vibrant, used to have all types of people doing all types of things. But now, for instance, if I go to do research on a school project, it seems as if a majority of the library is empty. And so I think what is happening is that officials, the people who give funding to the libraries, the people who decide what's going to happen to these libraries, are starting to see, you know, they're not using... People are starting to use libraries less and less. So, you know, to save money, to save resources, we can close it on Monday. We can close it on this specific day. And what they don't realize is the people who use it are doing really good things. Like, they're using it because they might be disadvantaged. They're using it because libraries offer amazing resources, whether it be a free computer or an expert on books. And so closing a library on Monday has significant financial benefits, like saving money, saving the time that you can now allocate to different things, but it also has the downside of, you know, you're robbing these students, these people that want to do research, want to learn, want to be better from doing that.
And what I think it comes down to, too, is we don't need libraries. We need computers.
Right.
So no one goes. I mean, realistically, majority of the people in the library are going because they need a computer.
That's what I said. Well, that's so what was said at the beginning. Part that of the problem technology
is the library downtown is huge. This is a massive building full of books. Well, it could be a quarter of the size and be used just as much if it was just full of computers for people to use, and it costs a tenth of as much to maintain and use. And that's really what we need. We need to look at what high school students need, and it's not a library. It's a computer center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's a good point. I think that that would address it, indeed. Because when in talking with librarians, they talked about their computers being full.
Mm-hmm.
You go in and the computers are full. So that is indeed what is needed. Another thing that's going on and has to do with, I guess, medical marijuana and the decriminalization of marijuana. How do you all feel about that? I just want a reading on how you feel about it. I know there's been some real opposition for a number of reasons. Worried about young folks and their utilization of it, and abuse that may occur. So where do you sit on this decriminalization of marijuana?
I'm fine with it as long as the laws that come with that decriminalization are enforced like they should be, or if they're not that tight, then make them tighter. For anything that people are concerned about young folk getting their hands on, it's not that hard for a person underage to get marijuana. I mean,
right.
People have been doing that before it's been decriminalized. So if you decriminalize it, it's not going to lower how much a student can get marijuana. And same thing goes for a multitude of other things. Like, you see all these medicines that, unlike marijuana, aren't really publicized in the news, but there are students that use them a lot, but it's just not publicized. So, I mean, I support the decriminalization of it if it comes with the standards and regulations that should come with it. And if students are getting their hands on it, decriminalization isn't really that big of a deal when it comes to students and people underage getting their hands on it, because if they wanted to, they could have done that when it was illegal.
Okay. Hold your thoughts. I'm going to come to you, Jackson. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. Tuned in to 411 Teen, and we were talking about some local issues, particularly the decriminalization of marijuana. I heard your opinion. Jackson, I had cut it off before I could get to you. Wanted to hear what you had to say.
So I think at this point, marijuana has become very much a cultural part of the United States. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is ridiculously common to the point where most people who are found in possession, they just get a ticket. They could be arrested, but most police officers understand that this is so widespread, you can't arrest everyone you find weed on. I mean, unless they find evidence that you're dealing in marijuana, they almost always just give a ticket. So it's something that's become very common, extremely common. It's harder to find a student in high school who hasn't smoked marijuana than has. That's been my experience. I mean, most people have. It's very common. And I think it's something that, as far as medical is concerned, is absolutely fine with me. And I think decriminalization is where we're at this point. That's the solution to the issue. And do something similar. Portugal has decriminalized almost all drugs in Portugal, and they've dedicated all their money they put into their police force to busting drugs, to helping people recover who are addicted to these drugs or have issues with these drugs. And they had massive success with that. They found it's way more effective to help people recover from these addictions than it is to try to stop them altogether. Because at the end of the day, I mean, the Tallahassee is about 180,000 people in it. I mean, I mean, up to half of them. I mean, realistically, I mean, a massive amount of them have had and smoke weed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just can't regulate that many people efficiently. But if you help people recover from other drugs, it's the same. It's kind of the same situation with marijuana. If you decriminalize it and you help people who do have issues. It's not something that I would want – I think more research needs to be done for it's completely decriminalized recreationally because there has been evidence that it can stunt brain growth. There's been different evidence. Some people say it doesn't do anything. Some people say it can stunt brain growth up to 24. It's just the verdict isn't quite out yet. Yeah. We're not 100% positive. So it's something that at this point is so widespread we need to decriminalize it. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily that's what we want to do, but that's going to be the most effective way to deal with any issues it does cause.
Well, I'll tell you the impetus for talking about this. I have friends who are emergency room physicians, mm-hmm. and they have talked about the cases where they have seen where an individual has acquired, so what they call spice maybe. I'm not quite sure. I'm not up mm-hmm. on all of this. But it's synthetic.
Yeah.
And they have talked about the kinds of problems that come from this, you know, just getting these drugs and you don't know what they're getting or what they're laced with.
Absolutely.
And that from their perspective, it would be better if it was legalized because we are not addressing those individuals who really get these drugs that are tainted mm-hmm. and consequently may have problems, psychological problems, and it recycles whatever it is in that drug for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. If it's decriminalized, it can be better mm-hmm. regulated, which can prevent the bigger issues which are often caused, like you said, with these more synthetic drugs, these new drugs that come out a lot, and especially for a college town. They're
exactly.
very common on the FSU and FAMU campuses. So if they're decriminalized, they can be better regulated. We can divert better funds to deal with those issues.
And they don't report how many people come into the emergency room yeah. with these issues. Okay, well, you know we don't hear about that. Mm-hmm. I don't hear about. I don't know. Maybe you all do, but I don't hear about that. And that was the impetus for exploring this with you. Another issue that continues. At what point do we stop holding individuals responsible for what they did 20 years ago? And we've talked about this before, but I have received several comments and wanted me to explore it again. And I'm talking about, if you did blackface when you were 12 years old and now you're 40 years old, mm-hmm. do we hold that against you? And I know I remember us talking about it, and I think a lot has to do with when you did it. But I want to hear from you, and they wanted to have me explore that just again with students and see what they think. At what point do we hold individuals accountable for their behaviors?
I think the thing we're talking about here, it's referenced on a lot of social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's referenced as cancel culture,
mm-hmm.
where you'll see someone who's made, anti-LGBT or anti-minority comments
exactly.
when they were like 16 years old as a joke. And now if they're celebrities, they're losing major brand deals and losing half the money that they make because of something that they said when they were 16 years old. To me, that doesn't really make sense. It kind of comes off as a really toxic thing to do. And I think it also like deviates our attention from actual things that are mm-hmm. happening right now, where if you choose to focus on a major celebrity that did blackface when they were 12 years old, then you're distracting yourself from people in Congress right now that are actively making racist remarks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're 12 years old and you're, people are accusing you of doing blackface and now you're 40 and you're having to deal with those consequences, it doesn't make sense to me, and at some point we need to draw the line at like
yeah,
this person has
had, where should we draw? And I think inherent in this question is where do mm-hmm. we draw the line? I mean, if you were 16, maybe, but what if you're 40 and you made negative statements and inflammatory statements about LGBT when you were 25? I mean, and I just, you know, I don't know that there is an answer, but I just wonder how you sit, where you sit on
it. I don't think there's a definite line that we can draw. Like, okay. Oh, once you reach 20, you can't do anything bad, can't say anything bad. I think it's not really a line. It's like a process where if you're 25 years old and you make an anti-LGBT remark, and then at 40 years old, you want to run for Congress, but on your way to running, people have brought up an old tweet that you made. If you can show the public, you can show the people who are calling you out that I know I did this thing and I know it's wrong, and you don't kind of distract other people from it. You own up to it and you show that I've gotten to know the people that I criticized. I've gotten to know them. I know that there are people now that they're amazing people. And if you really show that you've grown from that point in your life, then you don't deserve to be ridiculed for it.
Okay.
It's Yeah,
I agree with Apurva a lot on that. A big part of it is what steps have you done to make up for these actions? So if you've done something, if you've had racist remarks, so Kevin Hart recently lost a hosting job because of very old, I think they were up to 10 years old, anti-LGBTQ remarks, which were likely jokes. He is a comedian. This happens a lot with comedians, especially with older tweets because they've gone through a career where different jokes have been acceptable at different levels at different times. But I think a big part of it is, have you made – steps to make up for what you've done, and how much damage did the thing you do have? So if you've done something that directly impact a specific person's life for a long period of time, that's something we don't necessarily need to let go. I mean, if you've done damage to a person specifically, if this is a bullying situation or you specifically attack someone on a racial or LGBT level, that's something we're not – even if you did it – I mean – when you get involved with age, so people below 18, it gets really sticky because you don't know if that's something they still hold with them or that's something they said when they were young and stupid. So that gets really sticky, and it's a very case-by-case situation, I think. Kevin Hart has shown a lot of support recent years and from those with LGBTQ plus communities, and I'm sure those things were likely jokes. If they weren't, he seemed to have come a long way from where he made those places or made those comments. So I don't think we should hold him necessarily very guilty for those things or very accountable for those actions. Now, if you've done something in the past that was very negative, did a lot of damage to specific people, and you haven't necessarily shown that you've come away from that, that's something you're going to continue have held against you. So if you've made anti-LGBTQ remarks, but you haven't necessarily done anything to make up for it or ask for
demonstrated
forgiveness.
Any change in attitude
Absolutely.
Or insight.
Forgiveness is a big part of it. If you've done something wrong and we deem it wrong as a culture and you haven't actually shown that you feel bad for this or want to make up for it, then we most likely you don't show any remorse for it. So it should still be held against you. And I think that's a big part of it. And it's a very case-by-case situation. It's kind of hard to have a broad brush because, I mean, it's people's lives. So, I mean, every situation is different.
To add on that, I mean, for that Kevin Hart scenario that you told us, I mean, people who might have been directly attacked by that, people like, I know Ellen DeGeneres recently came out to, like, support Kevin Hart on how... You know, this happened a really long time ago. We need to let it go. Let him host.
And
the Oscars.
She's a lesbian. So
yeah,
and
she's,
yeah, right.
She's one of the people that that joke was meant to attack. And she's learned that, you know, okay, this person has grown from that. Mm-hmm. We need to forgive and forget.
Yeah.
It appears that the state of Florida continues to find methods to keep convicted felons from voting. Mm-hmm. They thought they had, you know, that Fourth Amendment, they thought they had it, but they continue to put hoops up for them to jump. Some are calling it a poll tax because now they're saying, well, you've got to have everything paid, all fines paid before you can have your voting rights restored. Wanted to have you respond to that.
Yeah, I was listening to a recent talk show on NPR, and it was a specific case study on this woman who had served, I don't know, like 15, 20 years for like, I'm not sure what the crime was, but she served her time. And she went to vote and they're like, no, because you haven't paid all your restitution charges. Mm-hmm. And then what shocked me was that she had to pay $25 million. That's what shocked me. Like, a normal citizen does not pay $25 million to be able to cast a vote. And if, like, I mean, come on, like, if she's spent 15 to 20 years in prison and she's been robbed, I mean, not robbed, but she's, her right to vote has been taken away for those 15 to 20 years, I think that they've learned their lesson. I mean, if it's a crime like scamming someone or, you know, like.
Yeah. I think it's murder and sexual.
Rape.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Those are the two that say.
Those are inexcusable.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to push back a little because I think that this is not necessarily. Obviously, the way restitutions are done can be obviously done wrong, perhaps in this situation. So obviously, that's a ridiculous amount of money. Now, we don't know what crime she did. So those may be legitimate if she ran a huge credit scandal or something like that. Those are maybe fair restitutions for the damage she did. And I think in a lot of situations, those restitutions are an important part of giving back to the society the damage you've done. If that's what the judicial system deems, what you need to give back is part of this restitution. I think that's a legitimate thing for someone to be – I mean, I'd like felons to vote, but at the end of the day, it comes with a pretense that you've given back to society for the damage you've done. And if the judicial system rules restitutions are part of that, you do have to – I think you should have to pay all of that back before you do vote. I think it's a fair criticism. I think the majority of the people who are bringing this up are people who still want to keep felons from voting, not necessarily for the right reasons.
Right.
But I think they may have a bit of a point here.
Okay. So you see it as a matter of a point. And as we – any other comments before we go? Okay. Another issue. Recently, I talked about toxic prisons. And I don't think it was with you all. But these are prisons that are constructed on contaminated land. Consequently, the prisoners and the surrounding communities have become toxic in themselves. There's been a big grass movement to do something to address this toxicity because prisoners are getting sick and surrounding communities and employees or whatever are becoming ill. Some say they're prisoners. So why worry about it?
They're also people. I mean, there's a lot of people that are also falsely accused of crime and given jail time. And even if they aren't falsely accused, they're still people. I mean, if your defense on putting them in toxic facilities is that, you know, they're prisoners. They did this crime. Mm-hmm. Why should we worry about it? You're lowering yourself to their standards of we're going to treat them like they treated other people. Okay. And I think that if you do that, then you're lowering your standards to what they might have thought when they committed a crime. Like if, say, someone committed a murder and they were in jail because of that. Now you're saying, so what, they're a prisoner. If they die from toxicity, it's all right. I mean, now you're lowering yourself to that position of they murdered someone, so it's okay if they die.
But their response is obviously they have no respect, no respect for society. They don't care. So why should we care? Why should we go through any changes to address this? If this is the best that we have, of course, the other side of it that you didn't touch on is what about the communities and the people that work there?
I think absolutely. I mean, it comes down to a very practical situational level because at the end of the day, there's only so much money. So if a community can't – I mean, obviously it's awful. It's something that's terrible and it should be fixed. But personally, I mean, we don't live in a perfect world and this is something that's awful and needs to be fixed. I completely admit that. But if people in a community are like, this is not our biggest priority. We have money that needs to be put in other places. I mean – and maybe it comes down to the way prisons are done in the United States, which there are a lot of evident problems. That is what needs to be addressed so this can be fixed on a level that's practical.
And there are a lot of – excuse me, just may throw in there, but there are a lot of for-profit prisons who may not have the sensitivities and the morals that we find, because it's about money.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that
no,
in.
No, yeah, that's completely true. We have a lot of issues with our judicial system, as a lot of people point out. We have a lot of people running in 2020 who are pointing that out, a big campaign.
Yes.
Particularly Bernie Sanders is a big person who's been attacking that lately. But I think it's an issue that has to be dealt with. But at the end of the day, how do you prioritize this? And how do you deal with it on a practical level?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
absolutely.
And that's the whole issue.
You know,
what do you do? How do you address it?
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah. What are your priorities? And how do you enforce them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Another concern, and I might need to just wait, because, well, we've got a little bit of time. I can set it up anyway. Big issue nationwide, we've seen a lot of it in Washington State, is to vaccinate or not to vaccinate, okay? This remains a major issue. It's an issue also in Kentucky, you know.
Yes,
about, yeah, you know, we were talking about Kentucky, and I just thought about that, that people oppose vaccinations. They believe that the government is overstepping when they dictate that folks have to be, you know, students have to be vaccinated. Yeah, what about those students? What does it say for those students who are not vaccinated and come and expose the whole school? I mean, that's the whole issue. So that's something I just want to set up and have us think about it. What should we do? How do we handle it? Where do we go? Because it's a major issue. We have people opposing it and saying they're going to send their kids to school regardless. We're going to take a break, but we'll return and look at vaccinate or not vaccinate. You're tuned in to 411 Team.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
To vaccinate or not to vaccinate, these are the issues before the students here today. Where do you sit? How would you feel? We were just talking about it off air. You know, going to school with somebody who has not been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. I'll start with you, Apova.
Don't even get me started.
Well, let's talk about it.
Anti-vaxxing is something that I personally am very against. I would not want my future children or even myself to go to a school where there is even one person who is at risk of getting a dangerous disease like measles. And, I mean, people who support this anti-vaccination movement, most of the time that they do support it, they cite otherworldly reasons like, oh, my child's going to get autism if I give them vaccines, or it's going to cause some sort of problem with them, and I don't want to put these out-of-body things into my child's body.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When people say that the government is overstepping their rights as a government to ban children from going to school who don't have vaccines, I don't think that's a fair assumption to make, where it's called a social contract. You have to give up some of your rights, some of your decisions, so that the government can ensure the safety of its entire nation. And this is something that, for me personally, even takes top priority, where we've seen what's happened in history without vaccinations.
We've seen
diseases that have almost eradicated the entirety of the human race. And if we let those diseases make a comeback, then we're ignoring every single scientific advancement, every single knowledgeable advancement that we've had in the past 200 to 300 years.
Some good points. We'll come back to them.
Absolutely,
yes,
some very good points. At that point, at the end of the day, your public education is almost entirely paid for by the government and through taxes, obviously, not to say by the government. See, a lot of people who are anti-vax are on the very libertarian side of things. So they feel the government should not be able to tell me to vaccinate my children.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, your child is now a biohazard. bringing back diseases that have wiped out millions of people. I mean, we have whole civilizations in the United States who were wiped out because
yes,
of these diseases. Native Americans, I mean, they've gone through
measles,
this.
Measles, we know all about that.
Yes, we do. I mean, and I mean, I am a English descendant. I mean, we wiped out thousands and millions of Native Americans with measles.
And smallpox.
Sometimes on purpose.
And smallpox.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yes. So I think at the end of the day, I mean, there's – I think if you don't want the this year's flu vaccine, that's a different thing. That's absolutely
okay.
That's fine. Like, I didn't have a flu vaccine this past year. It wasn't a super effective vaccine. It had some issues. Sometimes vaccines aren't perfect. But the measles vaccine, these are proven ones. They are completely necessary. They're something that should be mandated. Now, the flu vaccine, that's a little different because that's just the flu, and sometimes they're not great.
Of course, the flu can take you out here too. But they and those who oppose it will say, well, I don't want the measles vaccine. Measles, everybody, and I heard one guy on Talk TV talking about how he wanted his children to be exposed to them. He wanted them to have the disease, them to get sick. In fact, he took them to some friend's house whose children had measles. And he took his five children. I know this sounds ridiculous, but I've heard it, and I'm sure you all have heard something like this or can. And he exposed them to it. And he felt like he had the right to do that as a parent, and he was doing it. And all his kids got sick. Yes, they were sick. That's what he said. But they made it through it, and now they didn't have the vaccine, but now they're immune because they've, you know, made it through the disease.
Well, I mean, the irony of the situation is that's the whole idea of a vaccine.
Vaccine.
I mean, yeah, we're going to give you a very weak form, edited form of measles.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to develop the immunity to it, and then you'll be immune to the threatening situation. And I mean, this all started, I think the study came out in the late 90s. It's been going on for around two decades now.
About the autism?
The autism. Development of the autism, which has been largely disproven.
That's what I was going to say. That's been disproven.
I think he got some concessions in a court in the United Kingdom, which some people bring up. I mean, that court says he didn't entirely fabricate, but it has not been supported by other studies. It's not how. And he, as a scientist, I mean, a lot of scientists understand if you find very controversial, dangerous results that could have a lot of social impact,
you
have it peer reviewed, and you have other people.
That's right.
And he didn't do that. He wanted to cause a problem. Every good scientist knows this. If you come out and you find something crazy, like there's a lot of research these days that being gay can be genetic. If you find that, you have to make sure it's peer-reviewed. You have other people replicate it. When you have dangerous results like that, that's what you have to do. And he didn't do that. He clearly wanted to cause problems in that. It's
and
having lasting issues.
And a lot of people believe it.
Absolutely, yeah.
They've fallen into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that situation that you told us about where he took his kids to get sick, that is, to me, borderline child abuse. I don't think any parent wants their kid to get a sickness that could potentially kill them.
See, he said, and the commentator said that, and he said, well, it didn't kill them. That's my point. It did not kill them. Yes, they got sick for a couple of days, and they were really sick. But they made it through, and they didn't have to have the vaccination. And you don't know, you can't prove what the vaccine. I mean, it was just, he went on and on. Mm-hmm. What that vaccination, the impact of that vaccine.
That just confuses me. Like, that's like defending yourself for attempted murder. Like, oh, but I didn't kill him, so I shouldn't have to be charged
with it.
With murder. Like, that, to me, is one of the stupidest arguments you could make.
And I think Italy recently has taken steps. They have their national government has mandated if you don't get the certain vaccinations, you can't go to public school. They're one of the first nations to completely mandate. Well, one of the first. We have a lot of Norway and Swedish nations who have had that for a while now. But they're one of the newer countries that has started mandating that. I think it's something that's coming in the United States because there's not really another side to the argument.
Good. Another thing that recently happened is in one quick swoop, Commissioner of Education, Betsy DeVos?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wiped out the funding, recommended that the funding, all funding for Special Olympics be eliminated. How do you feel about that? What's your response to that?
I mean, I think this is completely normal for her. This goes with her track record. We knew this when Trump wanted to put her in that position. This is not surprising.
Okay.
I'm glad there are people in the education department who have been fighting this.
And who have sanity.
Yeah. She has a track record of not even necessarily – I mean, she's been put in charge of public education in the United States, and she knows nothing about public education. She hasn't worked in it, and she's had stances that are directly against public education. I mean, it's crazy, though. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the fact that she's in charge is just, I mean, ridiculous. And a part of the problem with – I mean, the Trump administration put her in power, and now she's doing something crazy. So –
That's what you said?
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, obviously, I don't agree with that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't agree you would.
Well.
But, I mean, what does it say? But go on.
Even hinting at that, like someone, like say you're a special needs student and you're amazing at sports. You're one of the best at your school. And now someone who barely knows you, barely knows your friends, your family, the situation that you're in says, I'm going to cut your funding because it's a waste. It's a waste to me. That just, to me, that feels so disencouraging. Where if you're a student who has special needs but is an amazing athlete and now something that supports you, something that is always there for you gets taken away from you, that can be so disheartening. Mm-hmm. It can kill people's future careers. It can destroy their confidence. Even just hinting at that, not even like passing the law itself. And if you get to the point of, you know, passing the law that, okay, we're going to cut funding for special needs Olympics programs, that's going to have such a bad effect on special needs students across the country.
Yeah. My next question was, what message does that send if your whole country says, I want to eliminate this funding?
I mean, and at the end of the day, she works with a billion-dollar budget. I mean, of all the nations of the world, there's a chance. I mean, I don't know the numbers exactly, but we have – our government spends more money than any other government in the world, and it's not particularly close. Uh-huh. Our government is the biggest in the world. It doesn't manage the most people, so I mean you could judge it in different ways, but the amount of money that goes to our government is the largest in the world. And the fact that – I mean, the Special Olympics, I mean, this is not something that's costing billions upon billions of dollars. This is – I mean, this is something – It's a great program that encourages a lot of people and helps a lot of people and is fairly cost effective. I mean, it's something that doesn't cost that much money, that does a lot of good.
I didn't even think this was a controversy before I heard of this.
Like, I didn't think people disagreed with that being a program.
And what's ironic is she was appointed by Trump and he cut education. And the budget was cut under his – I mean in his party and he supported it. And they cut the budget and now they're cutting back on things that
Remember how he ridiculed the disabled. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he has.
So the disabled reporter.
A reporter, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, the message was real clear there about what he thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he seems like he has a disability, if you ask me. I mean, all kidding aside, regardless of your political affiliation,
mm-hmm.
It's clear he has some issues.
Absolutely some character issues, yeah. And he's – I mean, these things are – I mean – to be expected. He insulted John McCain when he was alive. He has now insulted John McCain when he's dead. Quoting, we like winners after a war hero who has gone through immense torture and pain to protect American secrets. He insulted him while alive. Now still winning the vote of the party that is supposedly the party of patriotism. Right. The Republican Party still overwhelmingly voted for him despite him insulting John McCain, who I don't necessarily agree with all his politics, but he is a very respectable politician and I'm sure a good man when he was alive, and he's insulted him again, and now he insults disabled people and cuts their funding. I mean, what we were realizing is this is not necessarily just something he's doing on the campaign trail. It's things he's actually putting into action in his presidency.
Yeah, but to me it just seems like, why would you waste your time? You're the president. Mm-hmm. To me now – why would you waste your time on that?
I think he's just –
it seems like you need to have other things.
He's being – I think he realizes that his chances of even like re-election are getting lower and lower. And he's just trying to – you know, he's being forced in a corner, so he's trying to do everything he can to get more supporters. And there are a lot of people who a lot of voters who will support him for ridiculing John McCain or ridiculing disabled people,
that's
because that's where their political affiliations lie. Like, they would support him ridiculing John McCain because their policies and their opinions are against him.
They'll look past the character just for the politics.
Yeah.
No matter how bad he acts, he's still their guy. And what's concerning to me is one of the most telling ways to know who's going to stay in power as a president is the economy. Well, whether you think it's Obama's policies or it's Trump's policies or whoever you attribute to, it's doing fantastic. The economy is doing very well right now. The stock market is doing fantastic under Donald Trump. And it's very concerning because that's often the most telling way to know if someone's getting reelected. So it's concerning to say that going into 2020, this election, he's running again. He has a very strong economy and very strong, country behind him. At the end of the day, the president can only affect the economy so much. So as long as you don't mess it up, you're likely to get reelected.
Okay. Oh, there is so much. I've just thought about one I didn't even. What is it? Cardi B. Have you heard about her?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. We know all about Cardi B.
Cardi B, the female rapper, had said that there were times in the past when if she went out on a date and they went to her house after the date, that she would drug the man and then roll him, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she defends her behavior because this is what she had to do. She was a stripper at the time.
Yes.
And this is what she had to do to make it every day. Now,
that's
is there a double standard regardless? Yes, she's female, but what did Bill Cosby do?
Kelly,
That's not a defense. Saying that, I had to do that because that's how I made it. That's not defense. That's how you defend yourself from committing a crime. You don't just say, I was put into that position. Like, there are better things to do than drug someone and make them do what you want. It's not a defense.
It's absolutely a double standard.
Yeah,
I think if she was a man, she had been the prosecution would have started. And I don't think she's probably going to face any consequences.
You don't think she's that was my next question. Do you think she's going to have – are there going to be any ramifications from this?
It's a cultural thing too. Men don't want to come forward. Women are very reluctant to come forward. But a man to come out and say Cardi B did that to him, that's – the rest of his life is going to be defined by that. And that's a cultural thing. But it's also –
Really?
This happens. Yeah.
Educating me.
We've seen a lot of men are going to want to come out and say that.
He's just as innocent as the female would have been.
We're both.
I know,
men.
That's why I'm asking.
It helps us to understand what a woman goes through.
Okay.
We see a lot of women come out with allegations, with accusations.
And it's hard.
But then we've seen, pretty much the only person I've known to come out with a sexual misconduct allegation as a man is Terry Crews. And he went far with it, and a lot of people have called him very brave. But that's one scenario. And if you haven't heard of that scenario, then it really reinforces that double standard. If you're a man, just deal with it. And then if you're a woman, you need to do that. That's a terrible thing to do to someone, and you need to come forward. And that also translates into when a woman, commits a crime like that, where it's almost as if they're being excused.
Y'all have to educate me, for real.
Because I'm not a woman, so I can't understand. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for us to understand the situation of women who are abused like that are put in.
But
this helps us understand
because
if a stripper had taken advantage of me like that, even before her being famous, I wouldn't want to. I don't want anyone to know that. Our cultural view of
women don't want people to know it either. But
absolutely.
They swallow their pride, and they're coming out and telling them. And he was an innocent bystander in this.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's awful. And I think it helps me understand because that's a situation that a man can understand. That's going to define your whole life, and it's true. Women's whole lives are often end up being defined Harvey Weinstein. Those situations that were going on about a year ago, it helps men understand what type of situation those women go through. And I think she's not going to end up in any trouble for it, but it helps us men understand what these women go through. And I think that can be helpful.
Okay.
I think that and where that comes from is like, you know, from an early age, a lot of boys are told, you know, men don't cry.
Yes.
And then girls can do a lot of these feminine things, but men don't do that. And so that kind of like bottles up. And then now we see when you're adults, it's like when women come out with those allegations, they receive far more support than a man would. Okay. Where I know when Terry Crews came out with those allegations, people were like, what? Like, why are you doing this? Like, you're just trying to do this because it's trendy.
I appreciate and love you all for coming. Thanks so much to my listening audience. Thanks for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.